Support for the California Report comes from Digital Foundry, working with leading organizations to jumpstart digital innovation. More online at digitalfoundry.com. Erica and Wendy Schmidt, whose family foundation advances the wiser use of energy and natural resources on a planet where everything is connected. On the web at theschmidt.org. And the California Endowment, working to achieve health and justice for all. Learn more at calendow.org.
On today's California Report magazine, what closing the Diablo Canyon power plant means to a woman who grew up in an anti-nuke family, but now she runs the nuclear reactor.
I feel like there's these two pieces of me, my old conservationist environmentalist self and then my new like nuclear plant operator self.
And trees are dying at an astounding rate in the Sierra Nevada. Why folks who live in those mountains are really worried about wildfires this summer.
Hits these dead trees and they're just like, I mean, you see them up there, napalm sticks, you know, one spark and they explode.
Plus, we'll hear a unique language that was spoken only by a pair of twins in San Diego. And we'll meet a master classical guitar maker who learned his craft in prison. I'm Sasha Coca, and this is the California Report magazine. The past few days have been tough for a woman named Heather Madison. She helps operate the Diablo Canyon nuclear power plant on the Central Coast. It's the only one left in the state. This week, PG&E announced it's closing the plant. That's a big loss for the people who work there, and a big win for the environmentalists who've been fighting the nuclear plant for decades. As KQED's science reporter Lauren Summer explains, Heather Madison has strong ties to both sides of that debate.
Early on Tuesday morning, Heather Madison was sitting at her desk at the Diablo Canyon power plant when an all-staff email arrived in her inbox.
My coworker, who sits the cubicle over, is like, oh my gosh, oh my gosh.
She opened it, and her heart sank. Her bosses at PG&E had decided to close the power plant, where Madison has worked for 12 years. She got up and went to the break room.
Everyone was hanging out down there, and some of them were crying. And I just said, this is what we were expecting.
Diablo Canyon's future has been up in the air for a while now. Its license to operate expires in 9 years, but it looked like it could be extended for another 20 years after that. Now, PG&E has decided to close it by 2025. And Madison thought to herself,
we have time. We have time to deal with this, time to shift things.
Madison had already launched a campaign to save Diablo Canyon, which would save her job, of course. But she's also doing it because she sees nuclear power as a solution to climate change. Nuclear doesn't put out carbon dioxide like burning coal and natural gas do. But that idea that nuclear power is clean power is at odds with what the mainstream environmental movement believes. Madison is familiar with that crusade. It's how she grew up.
House where I found these two picture books.
I'm at her house in San Luis Obispo, where she's showing me her childhood photo album.
Lots of nature kind of pictures. Very geeky. There's my pink glasses.
Madison was a lanky kid with blonde hair, and she still has some of that now. She was born in a small Arizona town in 1979, right after a nuclear accident at Three Mile Island. That's where radiation leaked out of a nuclear plant in Pennsylvania. Her mom was pretty upset about it. At the same time in California, Diablo Canyon was becoming an environmental flashpoint for the modern anti-nuke movement. It was under construction, and protesters flooded the area. Hundreds of people were arrested trying to stop the plant from opening because it was being built next to earthquake faults, and nuclear waste stays radioactive for thousands of years. That anti-nuclear sentiment was just part of Madison's upbringing.
Came as a package deal. If you're an environmentalist, you can't support something like nuclear because it was so scary.
Which is why Madison ended up in a tough spot after college. She had an engineering degree, but she could only find odd jobs.
So I was like, okay, it's like the only thing is left is the power plant.
And her family had a really hard time with that. Madison took that skepticism into her new job as a nuclear reactor operator.
That I would learn as much as I could about whether I thought it was good or not. And then if I ever found anything that was bad, you know, I would just leave or I would share it.
But working there, Madison says she started feeling comfortable with nuclear power. And with climate change, she saw a new role for it as an emissions-free power source. Suddenly, those two sides of herself, the environmental and nuclear sides, weren't fighting anymore.
And it's like all of a sudden I realized that they're the same thing, you know, in a really strong way.
Unlike some of her coworkers, Madison supports PG&E's decision this week to install more solar and wind power beyond what state policy requires. But she thinks those renewables shouldn't be replacing Diablo Canyon.
That's what's so frustrating to us, is we should be using those renewables to replace fossil.
Like natural gas plants. Madison knows she's fighting an uphill battle.
We might not be able to change the future of Diablo Canyon, but this is really meant to be about the future of nuclear everywhere.
And she'll be making that case as PG&E brings its plan to close Diablo Canyon before state regulators later this year. For the California Report, I'm Lauren Sommer.
It's time to crank up your speakers. Every month on the California Report magazine, Susie Rocho and our pop music critic Steve Hockman bring you brand new sounds with roots in the Golden State. They're here to tell us why DJ Shadow, Dead Ships, and Jay Somm might just make it onto your summer road trip playlist.
Hi again, Steve.
Hi, Susie.
Let's start with someone who hasn't had a new album in 5 years. That's DJ Shadow, who's back with The Mountain Will Fall. The DJ, also known by his given name Josh Davis, is not only marking a milestone with a new album, but it's also 20 years since his debut. And listening to that track, it also seems like he's trying some new things.
Oh, he definitely is. I mean, introducing his debut 20 years ago was a landmark. It's credited as the first album of all samples, entirely made of samples. It was done very laboriously. You make something that monumental, you can't repeat it. And on his new one, he really is trying some different things for him. He's got this intersection of hip-hop and what is now called EDM and sound manipulation, sound collage stuff, found sound things. He really is kind of a genius at bringing that all together.
And like most records these days, there are tons of guests and collaborations. I mean, who stands out here? I mean, for me, you know, I dug the instrumental Bergschrund, which is the first thing that he's released from this record, and he's working with this German techno producer, Niels Fromm.
Oh, yeah, it's a brilliant piece of art music. I mean, I guess you call it. It's not really hip-hop. It's not really EDM. It's really art music. And I guess it harks back to some of the other older German electronic experimentation. The one that's gotten a lot of attention, and they just performed on Fallon recently, is Nobody Speak, which is a collaboration with Run the Jewels, the New York hip-hop super duo of LP and Killer Mike.
What more can I say? We top billing it, valiant without villainy, viciously found victory. Burnt towns and villages, burning, looting, and pillaging. Murderers try to hurt us, we curse them and all their children. I just want the bread and bologna bundles to tuck away.
DJ Shadow's new album is The Mountain Will Fall. Up next, Los Angeles band Dead Ships make some noise. That's Dead Ships from their new album, Cityside. And now, these guys haven't been together that long, but they already played Coachella. And after a couple of EPs, have a new album produced by Brendan Canning of Broken Social Scene. But what else do you know about them, Steve?
The core of this band is two guys, guitarist Devin McCluskey and drummer Chris Bendelolis, who came from Chicago. He's a transplant from Chicago, but it's a really L.A. album. Two of the songs, Los Feliz and Canyon. I mean, that's the start of it. The cover picture is the 101, oddly enough, with very little traffic on it. And I think that's sort of part of the point. It's this dichotomy of living in L.A. It's a beautiful place to live, beautiful weather, and yet there's a lot of dislocation and a lot of displacement.
Remember when we pulled off up over my Hollywood life, the wilds I can easy. We couldn't keep our clothes from knitting the dash, but when we took a room, we guaranteed at least an hour and a half. I'll say we take a canyon.
They've gotten some comparisons to the Strokes, even the Black Keys. But what really stands out for you?
I'm going to make a comparison that some people are going to hate, and they might hate too, and that is the Foo Fighters. I hear that sense of wanting to write anthems, wanting to write things that reach out. They've got hooky choruses. I mean, the Strokes fit on that too, but there's more edge than I get from the Strokes usually, and more of an L.A. feel. You know, we want bands to write anthems. We want bands to try to speak for their time. And whether they succeed or not, I think it's a good ambition.
That's Dead Ships. Their new album is Cityside. And we usually focus on new albums, but we're going to wrap it up today with a single, and that's from Bay Area band J-Som.
When I wake up then.
That's I Think You're All Right by J-Som, and actually J-Som is Melina Duterte, and she's currently on tour with Mitski, who has an album that's been getting a lot of attention right now. This is another example of somebody who, you know, made some recordings in her bedroom, put them up on Bandcamp and SoundCloud, and she's formed a band to go on tour.
For anybody who's intrigued by that song, go listen to some of her other stuff on Bandcamp. She's put up some sets of unfinished and semi-finished songs and things from the last few years, and there's a lot going on here. It's not all sounding like what we just heard there. I'm very eager to hear where this goes next.
Steve Hawkman has more on the releases from J-Som, Dead Ships, and DJ Shadow at californiareport.org. He covers pop music for the California Report and KPCC, among many others. Thanks, Steve.
Thank you, Susie.
You might know that twins sometimes develop a way of communicating together that no one else can understand. In our next installment of The World According to Sound, Chris Hoff and Sam Harnett bring us the story of twins from San Diego who captivated the nation with the way they spoke to each other.
These two girls are the only ones in the world who know how to speak this language. Grace and Victoria Kennedy are twins. They were born in the early 70s, and like many twins, they had their own idiosyncratic way of talking to each other. But their parents thought they had developmental problems. They sent them to live with their grandma. She spoke only German to the twins and kept them away from other kids. In this isolation, Grace and Victoria developed their own personal language, a phenomenon called idioglossia. This audio is from a documentary called Poto and Cabango, which were the names the two called each other. The six-year-olds are playing together, communicating in the only way they know how.
My brother's a little bit of a Howdy duck. Sing skulking skinks. I think skulking skinks.
Not like that
going skulking skinks. I going skinks.
The world according to sound is made by Chris Hoff and Sam Harnett.
Whoa. You can hear more of these 90-second audio journeys from The World According to Sound at californiareport.org. And while you're there, subscribe to our podcast. Wildfire season is here. Big fires have already blazed in Santa Barbara, Kern County, San Diego, and the mountains northeast of LA. California's forests are deader than ever. This week, federal forest officials announced that drought and an infestation of hungry bark beetles have killed 26 million trees in the Southern Sierra just since October. Add that to the 40 million trees already dead. Alice Daniel headed up to the Sierra to find out how folks in one community are bracing themselves for what could be an especially devastating fire season.
75-year-old Roger Coyne opens the door to his white VW bus outside the local pub in the tiny mountain community of Pinehurst. Three dogs leap over one another on their way out.
Chief, come here. Sing me a song. Woo-woo-woo.
Apparently, Chief doesn't sing on cue. Coyne has lived in Pinehurst, about an hour east of Fresno, for 60 years. Last summer, he packed his six dogs and 1,200 pounds of tools to evacuate his home ahead of a wildfire. His property was covered in ashes, but it survived. Now, Coyne keeps a constant ear out for where the fires are.
I listen to scanners all the time for my paranoia, so I can hear the fire guys. And so that's running all day long.
Last year's rough fire, the one that caused him to evacuate, tore through nearby National Forest and part of Kings Canyon National Park, burning more than 230 square miles. This summer, the forests are at risk of burning again. Coyne looks up from his burger and fries and points out the window to a nearby mountain. It's mostly dead ponderosa pines, heavy with brown needles.
Hits these dead trees and they're just like, you see them up there. Napalm sticks, you know, one spark and they explode.
In the foothills nearby, a crew from Cal Fire practices cutting a fire line on a steep trail. Steady rain this winter brought a lot of new growth to the foothills.
Virginian grass is 4 and 6 feet tall here.
That's Captain Roger Rains.
Combine that with the oak mortality, combine that with the fuels that transition from here into those dead pine trees, it's a time bomb.
The grasses spread fire quickly, he says. Normally, cattle would be up here grazing it down, but ranchers sold off a lot of their herds during the drought. Rain says Cal Fire is prepping early for a tough season with new equipment that can shred dead trees.
Obviously, it's providing a benefit to the citizens up there to get rid of those dead trees, to maintain that fuel break up there.
Firefighters might get a short reprieve because of the winter rain, officials say. But unless forests are thinned and restored, we're heading toward a new normal. Climate change, drought, stressed and dying trees, forests that are too dense, and yes, massive wildfires. Mahalia Lomel came to these woods years ago from New York, where she was a pianist. When fire season starts, she's reminded that she can't be too attached to her Steinway Grand.
Every year is like, you know, you get paranoid and you're like freaked out all the time. You know, you just kind of have to be able to let it go because what can you do?
The presence of the dead trees makes the paranoia worse, she says. And Lomel's aware of how flammable these pines are. In the spring, mountain residents are allowed to burn branches and limbs on their property.
You know, it really does explode and you can really feel the danger.
Governor Jerry Brown's state budget includes $30 million for CAL FIRE to take out dead trees near roads and buildings and to provide grants for mountain communities like Pinehurst, where Lomel lives.
You're aware that things are changing, and they're changing quickly, and that we have to adapt if we're going to survive.
And Lomel wants to play her part. She's now on the board of her local fire safe council. It just got a huge grant from CAL FIRE to remove dead trees. And hopefully, that will make her community a little bit safer. For the California Report, I'm Alice Daniel in the Southern Sierra Nevada.
California is bringing more art programs back into the prison system after making some big cutbacks. We want you to meet a man in San Diego who's out of prison. He's happily obsessed with building world-class guitars. As KQED's Tiffany Kamhai explains, yes, this is a tale of redemption.
Beautiful, right? This instrument is a handmade classical guitar built by Robert Vincent. Professional musician and classical guitar teacher Jen Young recently bought this guitar. It's worth several thousand dollars, and it's Young's third Robert Vincent guitar. He says each one he owns has a different personality.
It has this beautiful, elegant sound where all the notes are separated beautifully. A lot of times hearing those voices separately is a really prized part of an instrument.
Guitar maker or luthier Robert Vincent has been building classical Spanish-style guitars by hand for close to 20 years. But unlike most luthiers, Vincent says he learned all the fundamentals of guitar making while in prison.
To the point where the guitars that were coming out of that program were world class. They were concert guitars.
Vincent says as a young man, he never would have guessed that he would be a fan of classical music, let alone building the instruments that play it. He says in his younger years, his musical tastes were a little bit different, more like this. One night in the late 1980s, when he was visiting friends in Sacramento, Vincent found himself in the middle of a brawl.
The guys that I was with pulled out a gun and shot one of the other guys. California law says that I'm pretty much guilty just right along with him.
At 20 years old, Vincent was found guilty of second-degree murder. He was sentenced 15 to life. While incarcerated at Dual Vocational Institute in Tracy, California, Vincent heard the classical guitar played live for the first time while participating in an arts education class. The piece was Leyenda by the Spanish composer Isaac Albéniz.
It was just this amazing thing, and I knew right then that's what I wanted to do.
At the time, Vincent had no musical background, but he says the music and craft of guitar making spoke to him. Luthier Kenny Hill taught the guitar building class at Dual. Hill says Vincent had an eye for it.
He could really deal with shapes and surfaces and finishes and all of that, and that showed up right away.
Vincent also left two sons behind. They were just 2 and 5 years old when their dad got locked up. They grew up in the prison visiting room. Vincent says guitar making gave him a way to still have a positive effect on his kids' lives.
Okay, my dad's in prison, but my dad's a guitar maker. So, sorry, it's kind of an emotional thing. Which kind of relieves some of the stigma for them.
Vincent became a rising star in the prison's guitar making class. And Harry Belafonte commissioned him to build a guitar for Carlos Santana as a gift.
About a month later, Santana wrote me a letter and thanked me for the masterpiece.
Prison officials began to notice Vincent's amazing work. And guess what? After being denied 3 times, Vincent was granted parole in 2005. A year later, he was out. And through connections he made while in prison, Vincent set up his own guitar-making business. In Vincent's San Diego garage, which doubles as his woodworking shop, there are stacks of expensive lumber, saws, chisels, templates, and other handmade tools neatly organized along the walls.
This instrument is almost complete, and it's getting the finish applied to it.
So far, Vincent is doing all right, but he's kept quiet about his past. After he once told a potential client about his time in prison and never heard back, he decided to stop sharing his story. Vincent says he's not proud of what put him in jail, and he's still remorseful to this day.
I want to be judged on the merits of my art and, you know, what I'm doing now.
But Vincent says he's ready to open up now. Jen Young, the guy who owns three Vincent guitars, just found out about his close friend and collaborator's time in prison. The two have known each other for a decade. And in all those years, Vincent never said a word about his past. When Young learned Vincent's secret, he was supportive. Young says there are many parallels between the practice of music and the lives of those who are incarcerated.
The fundamental aspect of it is redemption, is that you always get the chance to play the piece again and to make it better.
Vincent's actions to better himself also had a transformative effect on other people's lives. His two sons have grown up to become successful artists themselves. One works as a professional painter and the other as a fine woodworker. Vincent attributes his kids' success in part to seeing him overcome some very tough times, thanks to the power of art. For the California Report, I'm Tiffany Kamhai in San Diego.
Step flat, there you go. One lap, that's all you need. When you come back around here, you'll be going, hey, it's pretty cool.
That's the godfather of skate at the Church of Eight Wheels in San Francisco, a shrine to roller disco. It's just one stop we'll make next week when we take a road trip to some unique, out-of-the-way spots you can visit across California. We'll swim in a snake-filled lake in the Sierra and visit the remnants of a spectacular movie set buried in sand dunes on the Central Coast. Join us next week for our Hidden Gems show. California Report Magazine, a production of KQED Public Radio in San Francisco. Let us know what you think about our show on Facebook or calreport@kqed.org. Our director this week is Guy Marzorati. The technical producer is Seal Muller, with additional engineering from Howard Gelman and Rob Spate. The senior editor is Victoria Maulion. David Marks is our web producer, and our interns are Lacey Jane Roberts and Eli Wertschafter. Andrea Kissick, Kat Snow, and Chloe Veltman are contributing editors this week. The California Report's editorial team includes Susie Racho, Ingrid Becker, and Holly Kernan. I'm Sasha Coca. Thanks for listening. This is the California Report Magazine.
Support for the California Report comes from the Wesley Foundation, improving the lives of California's children and youth at risk. The James Irvine Foundation, expanding economic and political opportunity for Californians who are working but struggling with poverty. More at irvine.org. And Eric and Wendy Schmidt, whose family foundation advances the wiser use of energy and natural resources on a planet where everything is connected. On the web at theschmidt.org.